daydreaming about dragons. So I've been running an investigative game for about half a dozen sessions, maybe eight, and it's generating thoughts. I'm generating thoughts about investigative games and how I would do them and advice I would give to people who were doing them. I'm running an investigative game called The Blue Coats. The first one is called The Ghoul Case, and it is a Blades in the Dark game in which the players are investigators. And it's pretty cool. So I want to talk about some things to think about, because investigative games are not always easy, and the systems aren't always helping you. So let's talk about a couple things. All right. Leads. Go over the leads. Like, they've got a murder site. Generate the leads. Think about what the leads are going to be. The leads are the rooms of the dungeon in an investigative game. Write them down. Write them down. Give them three or four to start with. And they will generate leads that you had never anticipated, hopefully, if things are going well. And when they do that, don't block it just because you didn't think of it. Go with it. You can have structure and still improv within that structure. That doesn't mean you're making up a new person of who the murderer is. The way I like to run investigative games, you know who the murderer is. You know who the perpetrator is. I like starting off having it all done, but there are details in between that I might have missed. And when the players think of things that are smart, just because you didn't think of it doesn't mean you should block it. So put in structure, put in some work, but allow there to be some flexibility within that work and some improv within it. Okay, so that's a big advice. Leads are the rooms of your dungeon in an investigative game. Okay? So here's the deal. What if they go to three leads, it doesn't go well, and the dice are cold for them, they don't find anything? So there are a couple of things that could be going on here. One, you could be asking for bad die rolls. That's very possible, right? Or, you know, if they find the bad guy's desk, here's an example. They find the bad guy's desk. You call for a perception roll. Don't do that. Ask them, what are you doing? Are you just ransacking the desk? Do you care if anyone who finds the desk later knows that it was ransacked? If you're willing to do that, if you're willing to deal with those consequences of the bad guy being alerted to your presence, then I'll just give you it. Right? Is there something secret in there? Ask them, how are you searching the desk? Is there something super special that a perception roll would help? Great. Maybe make a perception roll. Put a couple things together. Hey, you know what? You notice receipts from the same restaurant from the other person you talked to at the old lead. Oh, they were at the restaurant at the same time. Interesting. That's the kind of stuff you can do with perception. But I wouldn't just like search a desk, roll perception, you didn't find anything. Give me a break. I can't look at a desk. So if they're not finding any evidence and they're not finding anything, it might be that you're using the system poorly. That's something to think about. It might not be, but it might be. Okay, what else can you do? Maybe the case goes cold. Have another case ready. And I know that's not easy, right? Especially if you put a lot of work into this. I get it. But if you want to run that kind of game where there are a lot of cases coming in, maybe make up a bunch of random tables so you can just roll a case on the fly. It's okay to have an open and close case. Hey, you know, they go to the chief and they're like, Chief, listen, this case is cold. He's like, all right, well, there's a gangland killing downtown. Why don't you take that? It's open and shut. Everybody in town knows who did it. Just find the evidence so the barristers can make it stick and go find the person. Boom. You know, so if you put together some random tables, you can just make things off the fly. Different types of cases, people, maybe a part, one table that's a, you know, twists. But don't make it too twisty. You kind of want people to figure it out and then see what they do with what they figured out. That's kind of the interesting thing about investigation. It's definitely the road there and how they get there. Absolutely. Absolutely. The journey is the thing. You know? But players being smart is also a cool thing. So don't block it, you know? But don't take cold cases off the table. That's fun. That is a fun thing. And it can be neat. And it can be like the monster that got away, you know? Oh, that case. The Manticore case. Oh, it haunts me. We never found out. We never found out who used those Manticore spikes to kill the Duke. I look at that file all the time. So cold cases can be cool. Something else I use, a bit of Apocalypse World, Blades in the Dark tech, clocks. Have the bad guy, you know, on the move, doing stuff. You know? And that way there's new leads being generated by the person moving. And it gives you an insight into them so you know where they're going. They're in motion. That's cool. And it gives the players the ability to figure out where they're heading, where the suspect is heading, and head them off there. And you can make the suspect's life very difficult, right? You can have a case where they're looking into, someone who is not honest in their work, and their second in command can be ready to turn. That can be a clock. Second in command goes to the detective and says, I can't do this, you know. My commander is ridiculous. They're abusing their position. So you can use clocks to put things in motion and make things moving rather than static, rather than just a closed door mystery. So the other thing I would recommend is not necessarily reading mysteries. I don't know if there's a... I haven't played a great mystery campaign or mystery game. I've run investigative games. I feel like there's a definite difference, right? My inspirations come from The Wire. They come from Heat. They come from Killing Eve. They come from True Detective. Sherlock Holmes, which is definitely a mystery. I get it. But there are a lot of incarnations of Sherlock Holmes. And take your pick. You know? Have fun. It's not exactly the most realistic of mysteries, if you dig. So take them in, man. Take them in and enjoy them. They will inspire you. They will definitely inspire you. So that's what I'm thinking about. Investigative games. And how do you get them going? And what makes them fun? They're weird. They're weird. They're different. I've always loved city games, so they play to a strength of mine, definitely. But they also take a type of pacing that's very difficult and challenging and new to me. To me. Not to you. For you, it might be easy. I hope so. Anyway, investigative stuff. Tell me how it goes at your game table. I'd love to hear about it. What great investigations, what amazing cases have been solved at your table? Can't wait to hear. It's time for the inspiration goat. All right, inspiration goat. I haven't finished reading this yet, but I can't turn you down. So here we are. I am reading The Priest of Bones, War for the Rose Throne by Peter MacLean. And It reads very much like a fantasy, swordsy, Blades in the Dark game. Very, very much. It's about soldiers coming back from war, convincing members of their platoon to go back with them to their home city and take over the family business, which is crime. Straight up organized crime. Cool. So I'm not done with it yet, so I don't know if I like it or not, but I'm enjoying it. I'm reading it and I'm enjoying it. Don't have a review yet. But I'm into it. I'm reading it and I'm definitely going to finish it. Unless it really kicks me in the neck, which I don't think it's going to do. It's doing okay for that so far. Okay, so. What is it about this book? There's a part in the book where the main character, who is a priest and a leader in his, you know, army, was a leader in the army, who talks about how he just doesn't know anything about geography or history. And I thought that was a really interesting choice. And I've seen it done in role-playing games, and I think we need to talk about it. We need to talk about it a lot. So here's the thing. Here's the thing. It can work. That can be cool, especially if you're going into a game that has a really robust setting, right? And you don't know it, right? If I was running a game, if I was playing in a game with my buddy Wit, and it was Glorantha, I might want to play like his apprentice or even his child so that he could teach me about the world and how it worked. And we've talked about Glorantha a lot, Wit and I, but that way he could teach me in-game, and that would be cool. We definitely did something like this in our Blades in the Dark game, which is linked in this episode show notes. It's called Bluecoats the Ghoul Case, after the first case that the crew solved. We since finished the Wizard Jar case, and now we're on to the Unity case. And it's all going really well. So, in that game, Strash is a Blades in the Dark aficionado and knows the setting up and down, left and right, amazingly. And that's really cool. So Strash is playing like the City Watch liaison to the investigator, right? Because investigators traditionally come from out of town so that they're not, you know, so that they can just take people down and not be involved with the factions, which they are, but it's just a big mess. That's Duskfall, baby. It's Duskfall. Okay, so Strash is playing someone who knows the set. Strash is someone who knows the setting, and he is playing someone who knows the setting. Great. Lauren doesn't know the setting as well, but is learning it through play, and so she's playing an outlander. She's playing someone who came in from outside. And the cool thing is there's not too much info on the Severosi, where she comes from. So we can just make it up, which is really cool. So she gets to kind of, you know, play the Adopt-a-Highway game, which is what I call it when a player plays the example of a heritage and then gets to make it all up. So we get to kind of make it up together, which is cool. Sometimes I'll get to ask her a question like, you know, in the last game, she said something like, I don't have a mother. I was raised by a coven. And someone had called her a witch earlier, so I thought maybe she was being sarcastic. So I was like, were you really raised by a coven? And we talked about it, how she was brought up in a very communal way, and she didn't have that bond with a single parent. She had a bond with, like, many people in her community. I thought that was really interesting. So, but what we're talking about is that she doesn't know very much about the city itself, which is cool because she gets to be surprised and shocked and upset in character and truly by how ridiculous and you know, what a mess Duskfall is, which is cool. And it's cool to see her adjusting and learning about it. That's neat. We also did this, something like this, when I ran a game of Burning Wheel for my buddy Alexander. And Alexander played a really clueless but touching kid who had magical powers. And it was amazing. It was really good. But the kid really didn't know what was going on. And so the kicker of the game was that the king has recently changed religions, and so he has declared sorcerers illegal, and they have to be brought to the capital. And it was the king's religious conversion was causing a civil war. It was a big mess. And it was interesting. So what I had to do as the GM is figure out what was going on with the Civil War, what was going on with the political situation all over. Because if Alexander is clueless and doesn't know and is going to be learning in play, I want it to make sense. Also, making that kind of political landscape is super fun for me. So that was just gravy. So that's something to think about if you want to, if you've got a cool world and you want to share it with someone, right? You want to run that one player, one GM game, and they don't really want to make up a whole setting with you. They just want to make up a cool character and go. Have them make up a kid. Have them make up someone who's clueless or really isolated or is just waking up from, you know, cryo freeze or whatever it is. Find your reason. And that way they can learn about the setting as they go, which is super cool, especially if you're the type of GM who likes that kind of world building. That can be really fun. Really, really fun. Especially if you find a way to make that character embedded in the setting without knowing very much about it, which is a little tricksy. It's not impossible. It's just tricksy. And the player has to be interested. That's my huge nervous thing about someone coming in, you know, is that they're, oh my God, what if they just don't care? What if they're like, oh, just another detail? And you don't want to dump this stuff in exposition dumps. You want them to see it. You want them to get into the mix, into the mess, you know? Have a court sorcerer apprentice them. Boom. They are now in the mix. The Duke's best knight has a squire who's a jerk and a bully. Boom, in the mix. They just got out of cryo freeze and they were sent to this system by the old Terran government to bring this lost star system back to the bosom of Earth. Boom, boom, boom. Create that situation so that they have a reason to be there and a reason to learn and an angle of their own. They can choose to go a different way. They can choose, hey, you know what, the Terran government is a mess. You guys shouldn't join. That's fine. That's a choice. So that's what I'm thinking about. I'm thinking about this interesting book that I got out of the Tompkins County Public Library. Thank you, library. Priest of Bones by Peter McLean. And how the character knows about crime, knows about their city, but does not know about politics. And I'm sure that's going to be a bait that's going to bite them. Sure, it's going to bite them right in the neck. If you've got characters who have information holes in their backstory, let me know. Let me know how that goes. You know? How much world building do you like to do? How do you show it? Holler it at me. All right. More info in the outro, folks. Thank you, Information Goat. Good stuff. If you would like to support this show, you can hit the support the show button and set it up so that I get some money every month. That would be lovely. Another way to support the show is to purchase The Dictionary of Mu, which is a setting book for the Sorcerer role-playing game that is somewhere between the triangle points of Mars, the Bible, and Call the Conqueror. If you don't have money to spend or just not inspired to spend it just yet, that's okay. Send me an MP3. Send me an email. Tweet at me. Let me know what's up, and I'll put it on my Wednesday reply show. I've got so much good stuff coming up for the Wednesday reply show. There's so much. I'm backlogged. I'm frozen with good stuff. So the Wednesday reply shows are well populated for a while now. I might have to do two. I might have to do a Wednesday and a Thursday. Go nuts. But thank you, everybody. I appreciate it. I appreciate it more than I can say. My summer is going really well. It's creatively very fruitful. And I really credit you all for that. It's been really wonderful. So thank you. Thank you for listening. And I hope your gaming is going well. And I'm looking forward to hearing about it. There are links in the show notes to both my Twitter and Dictionary of Moo and to the actual play recording mentioned throughout this episode. I look forward to hearing from you. Talk to you later. I'll talk to you midweek because there's going to be a midweek play show. I'll see you then.